But I want to take you way back, because we're really not so much above or beyond any generation that's come before us. There's nothing new under the sun. And so I'll take you back in a time and a space where I think we could all identify with. So when we go back there, don't just take in the story, but let yourself be a part of the story as we go through it. And we're going way back to the book of Exodus. We're going to start in chapter 32. And I'm actually going to start with the disaster before we go back to the scene of the crime. So let's start, have a look at this. When Moses came down the mountain so many years ago with the Ten Commandments in his hands, what he actually walked into was an unbridled, full-blown worship service. Everybody felt free and was enjoying themselves. Worship apart from God's will, though, is defiled. And so let's read Exodus chapter 32, verses 1 to 9. So this is a bit of an after the fact, and then I'll take you back to something that was hidden. If you didn't already come through the story reading it, you might not see it. So Exodus 32, verses 1 to 9. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that we shall go that shall go before us. For as this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is the feast to the Lord." Then he rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go, get down." He was up on the mountain with him. "For your people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people." We might want to say, well, why didn't they wait for Moses? He was bringing the instructions for correct worship. He had the Ten Commandments. Ah, but they already had the instructions for correct worship. And that's the part that if you just read that chapter, you'd miss the other part. They already had the Ten Commandments. They just weren't written in stone yet. And that's how they behaved, like they weren't written in stone. Are they the Ten Commandments? Is it something that, we're not saved by them. We're saved through Jesus. But he fulfilled all the law. So then wouldn't our respect for the Ten Commandments be very serious? Yes, it would be. As instructions for living and interacting with one another. The commandments had fallen into the hands of a stiff-necked people. More education won't help a person with a stiff neck. It just won't. People with a stiff neck already have their minds made up, and they will not be confused with the facts. And if you educate a stiff-necked person, you've created a bully with a bad attitude. And so it doesn't get rid of, pardon my expression, stiff-neckedness. That's probably the first time you heard that word, but it's a good word. So let's go back to the facts. The facts from Exodus chapter 19, verses 1 to 9. Exodus 19, 1 to 9. In the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. For they had departed from Rephidim and come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, 'You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for the elders of the people, and laid before them all these words which the Lord commanded them. Then all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken we will do." So Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. So after this, Moses gave specific instructions as to protocol, and then God spoke through Moses the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, verse 17. So they already had what they needed. If you read the commandments there, you will see the story explicitly. They knew what to do and what not to do. In Exodus 20, verses 18 to 21, after the Ten Commandments had been delivered, these words: "Now all the people witnessed the thunderings and lightnings and flashings, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, 'You speak with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die.' And Moses said to the people, 'Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin.' So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was." The wrong kind of fear in a situation like this can be confusing. He talks about fear, but there's two kinds going on here we need to be aware of. If we are afraid of God, we will not get close enough to hear the instructions we need for correct living. On the other hand, a lack of reverence for God, even in the presence of his spoken word, will breed compromise and contempt in our hearts. Just as the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, which it says in Proverbs 9, verse 10, so the lack of such fear is the continuation of foolishness. And so you can be exposed to the word, and yet if you have a contempt for it, not a reverence for God, if you're more afraid of God than you actually give him divine respect, you will not hear the word. You'll be exposed to it, but it won't affect your life at all. Only the wicked and unbelieving need to be afraid of God. The believer's attitude toward God is that of reverence. The dictionary definition of reverence is to have a profound respect and affection for, to be in awe of, to give honor as in to highly esteem, to realize that God is the one who holds between his fingers your next breath. If you like breathing, I enjoy it. Done it for a lot of years now. And it could be over like that. That's the one to whom we must give account. I don't like insulting big, powerful people. They can hurt you. So it's not a matter of being afraid because he's big and powerful. It's a matter of giving reverence so that the one who is almighty can protect and keep you from yourself and from the world you live in. In Exodus 20, verses 22 to 25, a little bit further, then the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say," remember, this is before 32, chapter 20 now, this is before Moses came down the mountain, it's before he went up the mountain even. Verses 20, where am I? 20, yes, 22 to 25. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, 'You have seen that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves. An altar of earth you shall make for me, and you shall sacrifice on it your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your oxen. In every place where I record my name, I will come to you and I will bless you. And if you make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn stone. If you use your tool on it, you have profaned it. In chapters 21 to the end of chapter 23, there are even more instructions of what it means to live a life honoring to God. Without these in place, any worship that a person does is false. Any action taken in the name of God that is not God-centered is self-centered and therefore unacceptable to Him. So when we sing, like Denise said, we have an audience of one. An audience of one. And when we sing, especially, I guess I would say this to the choir, we should be practiced. And show up and, oh, well, I think I know that song, or that's good enough, or I'm too tired. No! Priority! God has made us a priority. We should make Him a priority. I know we're not much, but we should at least give our best. And that's what He considers very much. And when we don't give our best, He only expects the same back. He will not be used or abused by people. We live in a materialistic society of pragmatic thinking. Our sense of entitlement has left us unable to discern God's will because we are so preoccupied with self-will. Even managing our lives according to what we think we should do in order to please God. It's all about self. And so you worship, being that kind of a person, it's defiled. It's defiled. When I am the center of my life, I am blind to the things of God and therefore unable to see past myself. I tell this to Cape Mary students. They say, I just want to know what the will of God is for me. I want to know what the will of God is for me. I've heard it so often. And one time at Cape Mary, I said to them, and I probably said it to you, that's the wrong question. The right question is, what's the will of God? Regardless of where that puts me. Is that not worship? Is that not bowing down? Is that not giving our life to God? Nothing less is. Nothing less is. Does it matter? If you've got certain things you like to do or be, and so God will, you know, put me up there and everybody can look and smile and shake my hand and I feel good. No, medicate your low self-esteem somewhere else. But don't dump that trash at God's doorstep. Need to worship God for who He is, regardless of what that makes us. So did Israel have knowledge of the Ten Commandments before they were written in stone? Absolutely. Specific knowledge. We just read it, Exodus 20, 23. You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gold. Not just a general knowledge. A specific knowledge. I don't know any other reason for this happening other than what God said in Exodus 32:9, I've seen this people, and indeed they are a stiff-necked people. Stiff-necked. And if we believe that we are incapable of being just as stiff-necked, we are sadly mistaken. What happened to them is that they heard the word of God, but they failed in what it required of them. That is, they failed to do the will of God. James later is much more specific. James 1 verses 19 to 27. I'll let you read that just for time's sake. But in that passage, James says, don't just be hearers of the word, be doers of the word. Because if you're just a hearer of the word, you deceive yourself. It hasn't changed you and you're not doing what it says. You just were in the presence of somebody saying something that was so interesting and you feel all warm and fuzzy and you leave the door and you're the same person you were before you came to the door. That's hearing the word and not doing anything with it. I hated homework when I was in school. And the reason I hated homework is because I didn't know my stuff. It was embarrassing. If I had paid attention in class and applied myself more to the learning process of what they were trying to teach me, I wouldn't have minded so much. And so that's why. That's why. When we come and just hear the word and don't do it, it becomes a chore and a burden. Because we're not really engaging in it. The Word of God isn't going to fix you unless you do it. You have to live it out. And that's not easy. That's the hard part. Nonetheless, You've heard me quote this many times before from Charles Swindoll, but it is so applicable here right now, I'll do it again. Sometimes the church can be seen as a football game where you have some 24 players badly in need of rest, being watched by some 30,000 spectators badly in need of exercise. Charles Swindoll had a good way of putting things. I suppose we could just blame Moses for the whole thing. That's what the people did. For this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And who made them in charge of the timeline? If God doesn't move on my prayer within da-da-da-da-da-da, suddenly I start losing faith. And I don't go to church anymore. I don't even like God after a while. Why not? Because you didn't give me what I wanted. Ooh. That can happen. Well, if God really loved me to give me what I want. My kids tried to train me that way. And I refused to go with it. Because it wouldn't help them. It wouldn't help them. Well, you know what they say, when the cat's away, the mice will play. Seriously, if our faith is so lame that we need the presence of a minister before we behave like a believer, we are then an unbelievable believer. If your language or your thought life changes because I walk into a room, there may be something wrong with your language or your thinking. Seriously, you need to own it. So they have dismissed Moses in their hearts, and they're looking for another leader. Aaron. He helped God lead. Can you hear it? I can just hear them doing that. Let's get Aaron. Moses has gone and left you in charge, Aaron. So take charge. The most dangerous thing I've ever come across in ministry is not people who want my position. It's people who want to use me in my position. And they're out there. It's nasty. It's nasty. But people always have agendas. Often have agendas. I can't believe what he did. Where did that come from? I think Aaron was more excited about being a leader, maybe. Oh, they picked me. How nice. What can I do for you? Oh. Don't always ask that question. I ask that question one-on-one, maybe in a controlled crowd. But if you ask it point blank to a bunch of people, you've just become their slave. I think Aaron was more excited about being a leader and therefore disqualified to take care of God's people. That disqualified him to take care of God's people. Because his love for God was superseded by the opinions of people. Aaron's excuse, chapter 32, let's back up to the scene of the crime, chapter 32, verses 21 to 24. And Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them?" So Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, that they were..." Obviously, I read that wrong. Aaron, what are you doing? Sometimes error is that serious. It really is. It's not a mamby-pamby. You can't reason sometimes, especially with stiff-necked people. You can't reason. Won't have it. Anyway, Aaron said, "Don't be angry at me. It's not my fault. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they say to me, 'Make us gods that shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what has become of him. And I said to them, 'Whoever has any gold, let them break it off.' And so they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out." Must be God's will. I mean, it happened. It's got to be God's will. Do you know how many insane things happen in this world that are not God's will? There's way more of that going on. And so we can't assume just because something happened But Aaron, poor fellow, I don't envy that position at all. But he's trying to cover his tracks. Really, you just threw gold in the fire and this calf came out. Aaron made the mistake of believing that leading God's people was all about pleasing them, when in reality, it's all about pleasing God. Otherwise, you're politically oriented and you're a servant of the people, which means when you live in a world where everyone does what they think they should be doing and you're their servant, I wouldn't last in politics any more than 2 months. You're either going to become a hypocrite and a phony, or you're going to quit. That's your only option in that scenario. Aaron had specific information. Gods of gold you shall not make for yourselves. He's trying to blow this over as maybe it's God's will. Aaron's not taking ownership of his mistake. He's blaming it on the people and on God, who obviously molded the image into a calf. And when the gold hit the fire, I'm innocent. No. You failed in your position. That's too bad. But no, you're not innocent, Aaron. That's too bad. A number of things come into play in this story in which we see worship defiled. One is stiff-neckedness, an unteachable spirit or attitude. You can't be like that with God. No fear of the Lord, a lack of reverence for God. And as a result, there you go. I'll just make my own God. I'll just do it, or I'll just fudge here. Or I don't like that song. I guess maybe it has a point, but it kind of hit me the wrong way the first time I heard it. And it's an old song right now. Anyway, everything's old to me. It's if God closes a door, look for a window. Please don't do that. Have the humility to realize you're going in the wrong direction. Don't look for another way to that same direction. That is so wrong. The fear of man. The fear of man makes one politically oriented instead of God-centered. He therefore blames everyone else for his problems. It's them, those, they, the other ones. That's the problem, certainly not me. Don't think that leaders shouldn't be approachable. But if they're a good leader and they're paying attention to God, you better have your stuff together, because if they haven't made a mistake, you're going to be in trouble. Because all they're going to tell you is what God says. That's all you're going to get. And they're not going to bend. So don't hesitate to approach a leader. And if you're a leader, don't hesitate to know the will of God. Seek Him daily. Walk with Him. Not so that you can lead. Walk with Him so that you can follow. The best leader is the best follower. That's what it boils down to in Christian circles. The lack of faith, believing that God had failed them, caused them to center on themselves and their own understanding. God has not failed us. God doesn't do things the way we do things. But God has not failed us. And if you need to, look at life with an eternal perspective. Eternal perspective. Loved ones, where are they? Did you bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord? Then they're okay. Well, I want them here right now. I get that. I know some of that in my own life. Maybe you know too much of that. But don't let that embitter you toward God. God knows what He's doing, but He has an eternal perspective. Story of Job. Job lost 10 children. Oh, horrible. How could Job possibly go on having any interest in God at all? I don't know, but he did. And the end of the story, 10 more children. Where are the first 10? Well, they're gone. No, they're not. They're with God. Are you going there? Because if you get too embittered, you won't end up there. Then you really will be separated. There needs to be humility before God in all things, at all times, even when you're broken and crushed to the point of exhaustion. Even then. These things are much easier to notice, I point out, in the lives of others than they are to see in our own lives. Until we see them in our lives, until we disdain them being in our lives, we will remain bound and defeated by them in our lives. Amen.